Attention Austin guitarists, are you having problems with your pedals? Have you ever wanted a custom built pedal? Well, I have the guy for you. That's Paul English at English Electronics. His pedals have been used by Charlie Sexton, Billy Harvey, and more. I use the English Electronics 4049 as my main boost and crunch pedal, and I love it. It gives my tone warmth while packing the punch I need. You can visit English Electronics East Austin shop by appointment only. Call them at 512-633-5106 or go to English Electronics on Facebook. That's English Electronics. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to episode 746 of How Did I Get Here? I hope you guys all had a great weekend, whatever it is that you did this weekend. I had a good weekend. I played with Skyrocket all weekend. We played on Saturday at Pix Bar in San Antonio. It was a good show. It was weird to get back to my hotel room that night at like 2 in the morning, turn on the TV, and there's the 18th inning of the World Series was going on. That was mind-blowing. Congratulations to the Boston Red Sox, even though you beat my beloved Astros. Congratulations. I'm a sportsman. I am. Saturday, we played a wedding in Houston. It was a great show. Good times. It was got very silly there towards the end. It was one of those things where we played for a real long time, and we just tried to make each other laugh there towards the end. And that happens sometimes in that band. There's seven of us. We're all really good friends. We're all very silly people. And once we start getting like kind of punch drunk after playing like so long and having such a long day, that we get a little cuckoo sometimes, and we turn that on each other in a very positive and humorous way, which is great, because there is another way bands can turn on each other, in a dark way, and it gets sad and mean. But that doesn't happen with us. Luckily, knock on wood, there you go. We all get along, and we try and make each other laugh. So it was a great weekend, great shows. Before we get into this whole show thing today, let me tell you, tomorrow night, Halloween night, Wednesday, October 31st, I will be playing a song with Dr. Plankenstein, which is Jeff Plankenhorn's Halloween show. It's his big Jeff, Dr. Plankenstein's Halloween show. I'll put a link in the How Did I Get Here Facebook page. There's a lot of special guests. I'm playing, Kelly Green is playing, Sila Misra is playing, Nakia is playing, Kimmy Rhodes is playing, Kalu James is playing, Barbara Nesmith's playing, Julia Milanta is playing, a lot of people getting up and singing spooky songs with Jeff Plankenhorn and his amazing band, including my friends Gabe Rhodes and Derek Morris, and a lot of other guests. Anyway, I'll put a link to that. Go to 1-to-1 Bar, 7:30 to 9:30 tomorrow night, October 31st, Halloween night. I'm going to dress up like something I don't even quite know yet. I have a great show for you guys today. Journeyman musician, a guy that has been on an incredible journey his whole life, Casper Rawls, is my guest on the show today. He has an amazing album out called Brave World. It features all kinds of great musicians on it, like David Grissom, Earl Poolball, Floyd Domino, Donnie Wynn, Chris Searles, Glenn Fukunaga, tons and tons of great musicians. I suggest you get out there and find it, CasperRawls.com. If you don't know Casper, and you don't know of Casper, he's a phenomenal guitar player, an amazing musician, an amazing songwriter too. This album, Brave World, is gorgeous. And he's got these great songs on there that I really connect with that are like these kind of power pop tunes that are almost like a guy that you might see on tour with Matthew Sweet or something. Like that kind of, just great, great, great songs. Great songs. He even has a song on there that he did with Buck Owens. After Buck Owens passed, they were good pals. It's a song called Little Bitty Piece of DNA. Him and Buck Owens. Check it out. Go to CasperRawls.com. If you don't know Casper, that's what I was trying to say. He's played on more than 75 albums, including albums by Tony Price, Kelly Willis, Doyle Bramhall, John Mayall, Los Straitjackets, Omar Dykes, Buddy Guy, Sonny Landreth, Webb Wilder, Sonny Sweeney, and many, many more. He was in the Leroy Brothers for 25 years. And then, like, in the early 80s, he stepped away from playing music and went into working with this sound company that did touring sound for huge bands like Styx, Heart, Charlie Daniels Band, and Supertramp. And it was a conversation with one of the dudes from Supertramp. I think it was Roger Hodgson or something that told him, hey, man, you should be playing music. And so he got back into music. You can see Casper Rawls, if you live in Austin, every Thursday from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the Continental Club right here in Austin, Texas. Go to CasperRawls.com for all of your Casper Rawls needs. And I hope that you enjoy our conversation. Here is me and Casper Rawls chatting it up. Let's get down.
Oh, I've been traveling on a boat and a plane, in a car and a bike, with a bus and a train. Traveling there, traveling here, everywhere, in every gear. But oh Lord, we pay the price.
Journalism. I was a journalism major. I was in high school. I was the school, the editor of the sports editor of the high school newspaper.
Oh, wow.
In my last year, my senior year.
And then you went to school for, did you graduate or you didn't?
Graduate high school, sure.
College.
I got all my requirements in, but I lack about three. What do they call them, electives? I don't know what they're called, but anyway, I didn't have enough to do that, so I'd have to go back to one more semester.
Take like PE.
I took PE the very first time.
Okay,
I got a great story about that because I wanted to get it out of the way, you know. So I went in the summer. I went to summer PE, and so I got put in the wrong class. I got put in the class with all the football players.
Oh, no.
Like Earl Campbell and Roosevelt Leakes and all these guys.
Oh, really?
And Coach Royal was like, man, I don't know what happened here, but I'm not going to mess with it. You're a big dude. Just come to class. Don't get hurt. Be here for roll call, and I'll pass you through. And you're welcome to work out. Just don't hurt yourself. So I was in there with all these big, giant dudes, you know.
Wow.
Mostly I'd just go out and jog on around the that's right after they built the stadium.
Okay.
It's now called DKR Stadium.
Yeah, DKR Stadium.
It was Memorial Stadium back then. They had a gym, was in the bottom.
And, oh, wow.
So I'd hang out there in the morning and just, you know, kind of work out. It was real early. It was an early class, like 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, Farrah Fawcett was in town that summer. She was going with one of the former football players.
Oh, really?
So she'd always be there working out, too, with her boyfriend.
Wow.
So it was just like, welcome to Austin.
I was yeah.
like, good grief, you know. Of course, I didn't know who all these people were, you know. It was like, later on, I figured out, you know, they were pretty famous people. Got
yeah.
to be pretty famous people.
Yeah. So was she already famous when she was there hanging out with the football
player?
Not to me.
I think she was staying. Because it was way different time in 1973. She was staying at the sorority.
Yeah.
Because I'd see her at a bar over there. Was a bar behind what is now the Hole in the Wall. Hole in the Wall wasn't there yet.
Oh.
And there was a real dark club with a pool table. And I'd see her over there, too. Because, huh. I mean, there was
yeah, you couldn't miss her.
No, God, no. But I'd see her over there. And so I got to know her a little bit, and I think, you know, she said she was staying over the sorority while she was in town, but
yeah.
she was basically going back to Los Angeles. She was trying to decide what she wanted to do, I think, between being here with her boyfriend or going back out there to go to work.
Yeah. Well, she definitely made the right choice.
I would agree.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So that was, I mean, Austin was such a different place back in 1973. So much smaller.
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, I'd go to the campus a lot. I'd stay up there. I'd see the same people all the time, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't do that nowadays. You rarely run into the same person.
Right.
In a year, you know.
Yeah.
But back then, you'd see everybody all over town. Like I mentioned, I lived over here on Lakeshore. And there used to be a store right there at the end of Lakeshore Drive called the Minute Mart.
Right.
And I'd run into Stevie there late at night.
Wow.
You know, we'd all, you know, go to the store. Because there weren't many stores. So we see each other at the stores, you know.
That's so wild, man. Can I quickly tell you, Brave World is really awesome.
Thank you very much
yeah,
for listening.
Yeah, you're such a great songwriter.
Oh, thank you
And you're such
much.
A great singer, and your choice of covers was really great.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, the whole thing, like, I love it when you double track your vocal. It's cool.
That was R.S.'s idea. I'm a huge fan of that. R.S. Field, the producer, you know, wanted to do that. And he wanted to do a couple other songs, but it didn't work out. But yeah, that was his doing.
How did you, I mean, they're like, well, first of all, let's talk about the Buck Owens thing, because that's pretty cool.
Buck Owens was cool.
You guys were pals?
Yep. Buck Owens, in later years, I got to know Buck, you know, apparently in his former life, I want to say, in the 60s, he was pretty a hard customer. He was pretty tough.
Yeah.
He was a tough businessman. He still was a tough businessman when I knew him, but he was pretty, I mean, he could be pretty edgy.
Really?
And yeah, it kind of made a lot of people mad because he kind of did it his way or not at all.
Yeah, yeah.
He either did it Buck's way or he didn't do it. But later on, you know, after Don was killed and later years, he got pretty mellow. And he liked me because I'm a big old guy from Texas.
Yeah.
And he loved rockabilly music. He loved Little Richard. He loved, you know, everything. And I got to know him through, first I mailed him a letter when Don Rich died, about 73, I guess, when Don died. Somewhere in the early 70s. And I got a letter back from Buck saying, man, thanks for thinking of us. You know, we're going to miss Don and appreciate you writing. And so later on, I saw a magazine article of Buck in a, you know, he's like an interview with him. So I wrote him another letter. I said, Buck, what are you doing? Are you going to record or anything like that? And he wrote me back a letter saying, yeah, I think I'm going to record. And then I got to tag along with my friend Dan Fort, who I played in a band with here in Austin called Tysco Del Rey.
Oh, yeah.
He was a writer for a Guitar Player magazine.
Yeah.
And he let me tag along to go interview Buck when he came back out with Dwight.
Yeah.
So I went out there and visited with him at his studio. We spent a couple of hours visiting with Buck and telling stories and just hanging out, you know.
Yeah.
He was cool. He was just cool as cat, took pictures and everything. And then later we cut a EP, the Leroy Brothers cut an EP with Charlie Sexton producing. We cut one of Buck's rockabilly numbers called Rhythm and Blues. And Buck got a hold of it. And somehow he got my number and called me up. He said, man, I'm digging this. You guys did my song great. I love it. I'm wearing
That's
it out.
Awesome.
I'm wearing it out. I said, yeah, cool, Buck. You know, I came to see you out there with Dan Fort and for the interview. He goes, oh, really? Yeah, I wrote you some letters, you know, when Don died. He goes, oh, that's you.
Yeah, yeah.
He put my face with what, you know,
the letters and stuff,
the letters, and I've been to see him, and he was like, from then on, we were really close friends.
That's awesome.
It was just unbelievable.
What Leroy record did Charlie do?
It was an EP called, I think it was called Rhythm and Booze.
Okay,
we were going to go tour over there in France. We had a record label in Paris, New Rose. You might know those guys, Patrick Mathé.
I know,
and we did an EP to promote the tour.
Okay,
and they put it out over there, and Charlie produced. We did some really cool songs on that EP.
That must have been real cool working with him, because you must have known him for forever.
Well, I met him later on, and, you know, I didn't know him when I first was in Austin in the 70s, but in the 80s, you know, when I moved back up here, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go back there. Let's go.
But to get to your original question, how, you know, we
the Buck Owens
the
song.
Buck Owens song, because I'll ramble, man. You got to dial me in here. I got AD. Yeah. Whatever AD, I got it, man. I'd called out there because Buck came to play with us. You know, we did the Buck Owens birthday shows for many years.
Yeah, yeah.
25 years.
Yeah.
And so I called Buck to see if he'd come back
to
play with us. And he goes, no, man, my doctors don't like me leaving, you know, too much from the house. You know, I got some health problems, my circulation stuff. And I'll think about it, but probably not. So I said, what are you doing, Buck? And he said, well, I'm recording songs in my office. He finally got hip to Pro Tools. He hated digital forever and ever. He hated digital. His ears didn't work with his ears.
Yeah.
Because whenever I would send him something, they would have to put it on cassette for him to listen to. He had a cassette maker. I mean, he had a whole recording studio, but he'd put it on tape.
That's pretty cool, though.
So he would listen to it. He couldn't listen to digital.
Yeah.
But they finally talked him into getting a Pro Tools in his office. So he was cutting tunes, just him and his guitar, and he'd play dobro or fiddle or whatever, you know, piano. He would do it all in his office. So he said, I'm working on a new album, and I'm going to play all the instruments myself. So I knew he had some tunes in the pocket, you know. And so I called out to Jim Shaw and said, hey, have you got anything I can do an instrumental on? Have me and Buck play an instrumental. He goes, I don't think so, but I'll send you what we got that we're going to let go, because we're going to keep some of it for us, you know. And they sent some to me, and they sent some to Brad Paisley and to Dwight. see if anybody wanted any of the stuff Buck had to record. And so I got
what
this.
A cool list to be on. Oh, I mean, you gotta admit that's pretty cool.
I'm so blessed. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's some unfinished stuff. Go ahead and
yeah, he has some unfinished stuff, and we finished it here in Austin. And I asked Jim if I could have the track, and he was like, "Well, I don't know, man. Let me go." He's got a foundation now, and you got to go to the family and all this stuff, you know, because of Buck's heirs and everything.
Right, right.
They ran it up the flagpole about a month later. He said, "Man, you can have it. You can have the track." So what I do? I said, "Well, you're probably only going to print up the minimum amount, right? Because you know it's not a big record deal kind of deal."
Right, right.
That's what's part of the reason they let me use it. I'm sure if we had a hit with it,
right,
I know how that would go, but we'd be fine, you know.
Yeah.
So they sent me the track and we recorded over it with Stuart.
That's so awesome. It must have been amazing when you sat down. You know what I mean? Like just listening to it, and like you had the stems and everything, so you could just listen to isolated tracks.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so badass, man.
Yeah. Well, we had gotten Buck to play on one of the Leroy Brothers tracks too.
Oh really?
On another record we did for Rounder, and we sent it out to Buck, and you can hear him talking before he cuts. If you isolate
that's
the track,
that's pretty cool.
And that's back when we had 2-inch tape. We had to send it out there.
Yeah.
You know, wrapped in tinfoil or whatever, get it out there, and overnight. I mean, it's just like ton of money.
Yeah.
Send it overnight and get it back, and I mean, you got Buck Owens though. Got Buck Owens on tape.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the digital? I mean, you know,
hey.
I also am of the age where I started on tape and like, you know, 4-track cassette and stuff like that, and like what I think is normal, and then now.
I'm okay with it, man.
You are?
If it works, it works.
Yeah.
Today's modern world, I mean, people make, you know, Grammy-winning albums on their laptops. Golly.
Yeah.
I couldn't even imagine that when I was a kid.
No.
Unbelievable.
No, that's really crazy.
So if it works, man, I'm okay with it because I'm half deaf anyway, so.
Are you?
I've gotten that way. I'm definitely headed that way.
So let's get back to Brave World real fast.
Yes,
you had
thank
some
you.
Amazing musicians on there, David Grissom, Earl Poolball, Floyd Domino, Donnie Wynn, Chris Searles, Glenn Fukunaga, the Hood Boys, the Hood Brothers,
mm-hmm.
and even more. How did you, what made you bring in all those people? I know you play with Donnie and Glenn, right, every Thursday?
I've been very blessed and fortunate to know those guys for many years.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they were my first call to do it, and I've known Floyd since back when I knew him in the early 70s in the Sleep at the Wheel. We used to hang out over at Virginia's Diner.
Oh, really?
I'd see those guys over there all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Mostly I was, you know, getting over a hangover, and those guys were getting ready to hit the road.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're, you know, some of my favorite players, and I was so fortunate that they agreed to come play because I didn't have a whole lot of money. This CD was a labor of love, you know. All my fans got all the money together to do it. We tried a Kickstarter, but it didn't work. We didn't raise enough money, so we did another series of concerts and house concerts and raised money, you know, through people just sending me checks. We were doing a show at the Continental, and one guy came up and said, "Hey, I hear you're doing this new CD. You need some money." I said, "Yeah, I'm hoping to get some, you know, get enough money to do it." And he goes, "Well, they tell me you're a good guy." So he handed me $300.
It's nice.
Like,
wow.
It's like, wow. I didn't even know the guy.
Yeah.
I said, "Well, just go get it, man. I want to hear it when it's done."
Sounds great.
I hope he heard it. I have no way to give it to him
because
he was gone.
Where do you stand with all the streaming stuff? Does that bum you out in any way?
Oh, or
does
man, that's ridiculous. Because, you know, I look at the statements because, you know, you put your album out there on the Spotify and all that, you know, you can see the statements. It's just depressing how much money you don't get.
Yeah. Do you think, did you keep up much with that, the musician, the MMA thing?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's way above my head. I mean,
yeah.
Unless somebody tells me I got to do something about it.
Somebody's passing some law or something.
Yeah, unless somebody pokes me and says, "You got to jump on board here to help us out."
Yeah.
It's a way above my head.
Yeah.
I'm so used to not getting anything for music that, you know, other than what you get playing live.
That's my whole career has been like that too. I mean, I'm going to be 50 on Sunday, but my whole life has been like that too. Cause like, I've never sold a lot of records. I mean, I've had some deals and stuff and they gave you money up front, but otherwise I always had to go out and do something and then someone gave me money for it and I came home.
Right. Well, happy birthday for one thing.
Oh, thanks, man.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. But as far as that goes, I've just, you know, all these records I made with the Leroys and everybody, I just figured I was never going to see a dime from it, you know.
I guess at some point, though, I mean, you played on so many records. Well, I guess some of them you just played on and you got paid for the session. And
yeah,
that was, yeah, sure. Same kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's talk about this. You came to Austin for journalism school.
Yes.
And how long were you here?
I was here 73 to 77 okay. the first time.
Okay.
And those years were really spent. The first year was going to school a lot. And then I would go down to San Antonio, where I'm from, and play gigs on the weekend, which is weird. Okay. Because now I'm doing the opposite.
Yeah.
Because I would play with some guys down there, two brothers, and I just ran into them last week. One of them has just unfortunately been diagnosed with cancer, so we did a benefit for him. But we used to play all the military bases as teenagers. They had these little gatherings for people that live on the base, you know, youngsters.
Yeah.
And we'd play the little dances or whatever, and so we played all over San Antonio.
What
so.
Kind of stuff were you playing?
Oh, Little Richard, and, you know, we play everything. Some of the songs that were on the radio at the time. Of course, you know, House of the Rising Sun and all this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they didn't care about the music. It's just, you know, all the parents wanted their kids out of their hair for the afternoon.
Right.
So we had a little concert, and they'd hire us for peanuts, you know, to go play.
Yeah, but that was also a time where, like, if a band was playing, like, that was a, like, you'd be like, oh, there's going to be a band there. Like, oh, no way. We got to go see this band.
Exactly.
I don't even know who it is. Like, let's just go see this band.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting times.
Oh, well, yeah, because, I mean, way before internet or... I mean, you just were lucky to catch somebody on the telephone. There was no answer machines or anything.
Yeah.
It was all word of mouth. And, like, yeah, so we played those. And then later I played... we used to play... I wasn't old enough to do it, but I was playing in a topless club across from the Lackland Air Force Base with the older brother of that band. One of the guitar players couldn't make it for a week, so I sat in for a week out there at the topless club.
What happens? Like, how does that work? Like, do you guys play while the ladies are dancing? Or
yep.
Are they dancing there while you're...
Oh, yeah.
How old are you?
They would, and there were some pretty vocal ladies when we played the slower songs. I used to, you know... play slow blues, and they were like, no, we need something we can dance to.
Yeah, yeah.
So they let us know what kind of beats they wanted.
Yeah, I bet. Wow, that must have been surreal.
Yep.
I've always heard about that, but I've always just wanted to do it at least once, just because
it's
surreal. So weird. Yeah.
Well, this was really surreal because it was across from the Air Force Base, and there were all the GIs in there coming, you know, and they were just like, they didn't care if there was a band or not.
Yeah.
They weren't looking at us.
Yeah, that's funny that management was kind of giving that money away.
Yeah. Mm. But, I mean, we were there, you know, it was a lot of fun. But anyway, from 73 to 77, I was here in Austin.
Okay, then where'd you go in 77?
I got a gig playing a house gig in the Valley, McAllen, Texas.
Okay.
I answered an ad in the paper here in Austin. They wanted, their guitar player had left, and it was I don't know if it was right around the time of, Urban Cowboy and all that stuff. It was a big dance hall.
Yeah.
But anyway, they had a big country dance hall, and they wanted me to be in the band. And I got a salary and an apartment.
That's really cool.
For me, for a guitar player who was starving.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah.
So we played at that club like Thursday through Saturday, or maybe Wednesday through Saturday. But there was a club across the street we played called the King's X, where all the truckers that haul produce out of the valley would hang out.
Okay.
So we played like from Monday and maybe even on Sunday. Anyway, we played a lot. And then in the wintertime, that winter, all the people come down from north. They're called snowbirds.
Yeah.
They bring all their RVs and trailers and come down there.
Yeah.
So we play the community centers in the afternoon for dances.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was like a nonstop gig.
I bet that made you so good, though.
Well, I don't know about that, but it made me practice.
Yeah. Yeah, you were doing it every night. And those gigs weren't short, I'm sure.
No, they were long gigs, and we had to learn the stuff off the records,
you know?
And that band, we would back up the artists that came. Some guys would come down without a band, like Mo Bandy, Johnny Rodriguez, Mel Street, Johnny Paycheck. They would shoot us the albums. And we would have to learn the records. And they do some standards like Fraulein or Pick Me Up on Your Way Down or some, you know, regular country songs that we could do. But we'd play their hits and people would just go nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, Rodriguez was like Elvis.
Yeah.
Because he was Hispanic. And the Hispanic crowd was just like, oh my God, it's, you know, Jerry Rodriguez. That's
awesome.
And we would back them up. And we had, in that band, we had a great fiddle player who played in the symphony down there in, not Harlingen, what's the other town? Edinburgh. He was in the Edinburgh Symphony. So he kind of kept us straight on the changes and made sure we didn't.
Yeah.
Because we were just, you know, the piano player, the owner of the club was a piano player, and he was a barrel house honky-tonk dude, man. He was like one of the best I've ever heard doing that. He could just lay it down there. But as far as learning the smooth kind of Nashville tunes, he was,
yeah,
it was a little learning curve for all of us.
Were you, how old were you?
I would have been in my 20s, I guess.
And you were single and just like...
Single, yeah.
Just living, just I being was, a professional musician.
Oh, well, I don't know about that because I was a bad drinker, too. I drank a lot.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I definitely had an alcohol problem.
Did it ever... Are you sober now?
Oh, yeah. 1981.
Wow. So was it bad? Was it getting in the way of... Or were you one of those guys that it didn't mess up when you were doing?
It got in the way sometimes, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even here in Austin, yeah, I was... I had some bad problems in Austin. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. People won't believe that nowadays, knowing me now.
Yeah.
In my new life.
Yeah. I get a lot of people that are sober that come on here, but I don't think anyone, I don't think I've ever had anyone with that much sobriety. Is there ever a line you cross where you're not consciously not drinking all the time? You know what I mean?
Not really. No, when I stopped, it was it. It was just like, turn it off.
No, but you know what? There's like a thing that happens. Like, you have to constantly fight the not drinking one day at a time, every day. Does that?
No, not for me.
Oh,
no,
that's good.
When I cut it off, it was done. Because I realized, I mean, very clearly to me, if I drank, I was going to die. There was no way around it. Because I finally faced the fact that no matter what, I thought I could do and control it. It was like, no way.
Wow.
I can't do it. So it's either one way. It's like a fork in the road. You go one way or the other.
Yeah. And it's tough if you put, you know, you get someone that leans towards those problems,
yeah,
and you put them in a fucking bar every night, they're going to end up very messed up.
It's rough, yeah, at times. Yeah, sure. Especially being around people that drink a lot.
Yeah. So, okay. So what happened when you finished your gig down in the Valley?
The Valley, you know, I was getting bad. I was getting bad on drinking and playing music, and the whole dance hall craze kind of down there anyway, kind of tapered off.
Yeah.
And, we weren't getting as many gigs, and I was like, oh, I better get back to Austin because that's where the music is, you know, that's where I came from, and figure out what I really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I've got all this experience playing all this country music. Of course, we didn't just play country. I mean, down there, you got to play ZZ Top. You got to play Jimmy Buffett. You got to play all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so I came back to Austin in 79. And I guess it was 79, yeah. I was going to put a band together with my friends from Mississippi that I had met living here, Omar.
Yeah.
And the Howlers.
Yeah, yeah.
But Omar had gone on, regrouped his group. But Webb Wilder was living here at the time. He was called John McMurray before he became Webb Wilder. So I was knocking around with those guys, and we wanted to put a band together, but they got kind of homesick, and they moved back to Mississippi.
Okay.
So I got hired on through my friend from high school. I was walking down there by Tri-Towers, and I saw my friend from high school, Michael Hahn. He's like, what are you doing, man? I just got back to Austin playing down the Valley. He goes, you want a job? And I'm like, yeah, sure. What do you got? And it was making speakers and putting fiberglass on these big, giant speakers for concerts.
Yeah.
So I spent about a month and a half, maybe 2 months, making speakers and, you know, painting them and putting wheels on them and everything and testing them. My friend Bill Stevens was the owner of that. It was called American Concert Sound.
Okay.
It was over there on Tri-Towers. I don't know the name of the street, but over in the campus area. And so they had a tour coming up. Their system was already out with the Doobie Brothers band. But they got the contract for this group called Styx, STYX.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they needed a guy to go out for the summer on the Styx tour. And I was like, hey, why not? You know, I'm not doing anything.
What year was that?
I guess it would have been 78, 79. Yeah, 79.
So like Come Sail Away was the big hit.
It was a huge hit.
Yeah.
And so I'd never done that stuff before. And, you know, climb on a bus and go set up speakers. And at that time, Styx was a little bit ahead of the game because they wanted to lift everything in the air to get the speakers up in the air. Before before them, speakers just sat on the stage.
Huh.
And you couldn't see, you know, there were some vantage points you couldn't see the band.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
So J.Y., James Young,
yeah.
said, hey, can y'all lift those things up so people can see us? And maybe it'll even sound better. And so Bill Stevens and some other guys, engineer kind of guys, figured out how to rig that stuff up and lift it in the air.
So J.Y. is the guy that got the rigs in the air.
Well, he's one of them. He's
he was the guy that was like, hey, what? Why don't we just put them up here? What's the problem?
Well, if you know
J.Y. all this rigging.
That's J.Y., man. Yeah. He's like always, you know, business first, music second, you know.
Yeah.
And so and that's what we did. We learned how to lift them up. That's what, you know, I worked for them for about a year doing that, lifting speakers up in the air. I did a whole tour with them all over the country, maybe 120 dates or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's some hard work, man.
That is hard work, man. Were you doing, you were physically?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
I got to where I was climbing in the roof, too, to help the riggers get the points set.
Jesus.
All the wires, the cables.
It's a lot of responsibility, too.
Yeah. I didn't realize at the time how cavalier I was about it. I was like, oh, yeah, I can do that. You know, man, no big deal. Lifting all that weight in the air and make sure it's all secure and.
A lot of people's lives in your hands, kind of, yeah.
I didn't, you know, I was young. I was like, yeah, I mean, still drinking, you know. I was like, oh, I got this. I got this.
Yeah.
I never drank on a gig day, though, because I knew I couldn't do it. But so we traveled all over the country. I mean, these big ice rinks, you know, up north, sold completely out. I could not buy a ticket to see these guys. Oh. Played Madison Square Garden, they did, for a week. Sold completely out. Toronto Gardens, Forum in L.A., couldn't get in the place. I mean, all the celebrities would come and watch them, and we got to meet some of them. Of course, through the playing, I got to be friends with the drummer, Johnny, because Johnny was the only one that would even consider drinking.
He passed away, didn't he?
Yeah, he passed away, unfortunately.
Poor guy. And it was from drinking, wasn't it?
A sad story.
Yeah.
But back then, he was jolly.
Sure, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he was like the life of the party. The other guys were pretty straight-laced. They didn't really
even Tommy Shaw?
Tommy took care. He was a health nut. He was he was a health dude. He'd go out. He took us out one time in Narragansett, Rhode Island. He rented a boat. We went out fishing.
Oh, that's cool.
He took us all out fishing, but everybody got sick because we were the night before we were all drinking. Everybody was leaning over the boat, and Shaw was like, what's wrong with you guys, you wimps? He was the only one catching fish, man. We were just dead in the water, man. We were just like, we were like, can you call a Coast Guard? Get us out of here.
That's hilarious.
But Tommy was he was healthy. I mean, he would drink occasionally with us, but he was into health stuff, and Johnny and I would be the ones, you know. Johnny would ring my room on a day off and say, come on, let's go. And he'd have a car waiting. We'd take off to like Studio 54.
Oh, you went there?
Yeah, he just walked right in. He just walks right in. I'm with Sticks. Yeah. You know? We just walk right in. There's some little bitty bar on the hills above Beverly Hills, you know. Just walk right in. There's like Jack Nicholson.
Wow.
All these famous dudes, you know, just sitting there drinking, smoking cigars. And Johnny just walks right in because at that time, those guys were
huge.
They were hot.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I used to babysit Dennis's kid, Dennis the Young's kids, in the dressing room, kind of walk after him while they were playing the gig.
Huh. I read that you took your guitar along during those times.
Yes, I always had the guitar. Yep.
But did you feel like you had chosen something that was taking you away from playing every night?
No, this was a definite means to an end, because when I was here going to UT, I had a bunch of student loans.
Oh.
So this was...
You had to make some money so you could get back on your feet.
Exactly.
Okay, that's cool.
And it was really good money. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of camaraderie that I've never experienced before, because it was like you're a team. You got to get the guys up and going, you know, no matter what. Weather, something breaks, you got to fix it. You got to make it work so the guys can be up there being them, you know. So at the end of the tour, I had enough money to pay off all my student loans.
Well, congratulations.
It was done.
Yeah.
Done with. And at the end of the tour, this is how cool those guys were. They had a last date in Madison, Wisconsin. They said, hey, you guys, there were like 40 guys on the crew, maybe 40.
Wow.
43. I mean, they had two stages.
Yeah,
their own.
One up and then another one going to the next city. Wow.
That they owned. They were their own stages. They had their The guys were in another genius city setting up their own stage. So when we got there, we just had to throw up the stuff. And then the next stage to the next city.
Yeah.
So at the end of the tour in Madison, Wisconsin, the guy said, look, you guys have worked your butt off on this tour. We did really well. You know, we sold a lot of records, of course. And what we're going to do is we're going to keep the merchandise money because we own that. That's our name. We can't give you that. But we're going to give you all the money after we pay the union. They split all the money with all the crew.
What? That's cool, man.
And that
solid.
That enabled me to buy a car. I never wow. had a car before. That I, you know, and a new car. I bought a brand new Checker cab from the factory in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
That's awesome.
I had painted baby blue.
That's awesome.
It's in the Leroy Brothers video with the kids and everything.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it was like $10,000 each.
Wow.
In 1979, that's a lot of money.
Jeez, man. So you came back to Austin, and then what'd you do? You kept working for that company, didn't you?
I hung around Austin. That's when I was just hanging around, figuring out what I was going to do. And then, you know, I would go hang out in the bars. And there, Austin had changed for me because I'd been all over the place. And it was just not fitting for me, you know. It wasn't
sleepy?
Say again?
Might have been sleepy for
well,
you.
Well, no, I just kind of fell in bad habits because I was drinking, you know.
Right.
I'd go over to my, I ran to my friend from high school, David Spellman. Mm-hmm. He had a bar over there on 5th Street. And he was always after me to come and play. And I was like, man, I don't know. You know, so just come bring your guitar and play. Just come play some songs. Like, man, I don't really do that. You know, like, I got to have a drummer and I want to be James Burton, you know. I want to be the guitar player. So one night I said, what the hell, I'm going to go over there. And I brought my guitar and my little amp. And I played with this guy. It was really good, and he was playing blues. We played blues for about an hour, and he leans over. He goes, "Hey, my name's Towns. It's Towns Van Zandt." I didn't know who he was or anything.
Wow!
Until much later, and then another guy gets up later, who I'd met earlier with Omar. I knew him as Deputy Dog, and he turns his back to the stage. I mean, to the people, and starts playing really great. Both those guys are really great players. I'm talking about Blaze Foley.
Wow.
But I never knew him as Blaze Foley. I knew him as Deputy Dog.
Wow.
So this is this little, man, it was really just a dive bar on West 5th Street by the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
That my friend Spellman owned. And just wandered in there, you know.
There's this guy's playing.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't, like, once again, meeting all those people when I first moved to Austin, I didn't know who they were till later. I just knew them as people.
I think they were just people then, though, right? That legend hadn't.
Yeah,
because there were guys just hanging out, playing at a thing, just like you.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I was afraid, you know, well, God, this guy's going to hate me, you know. But I start throwing stuff at me. But once he started playing blues, and he could really play, he played with thumb pick and finger picks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, well, the last thing in the world this guy needs is another guitar player.
Right.
Because he's good. And same with Blaze. And Blaze is like, I'm just going to watch you guys for a while.
Yeah. But, so what were you just sitting in with people, and that was
I was just kind of looking for what my next thing would be. You know, I knew some of the country guys, and I played a lot of the country bars in the 70s, the Skyline and Dessau Hall and Shorthorn Lounge, which was like, God, what a rough place, man.
Really?
You were lucky if you didn't hear a gun going off
every
night you played there. I mean, it was a rough place. It was right by the Stallion up there on North Lamar. And, of course, the Lumber Yard and Silver Dollar, and I kind of checked in with those guys, and I've done so much country down there in the valley, I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do that. And I was just kind of looking for what the next thing was, because I didn't want to go back on the road. I was kind of like, I'm kind of done with all of that stuff, because I got my loans paid off. I did what I needed to
do.
But then R.S. Field and Webb Wilder called. They were putting a band together, the band we tried to have earlier in the 70s.
Right.
In Mississippi. They called and said, hey, you want to come be in a band in Mississippi? I was like, well, I got a car, paid off.
Yeah.
I got no debts. I'm not married.
Well.
I'm single. Why not? Go check it out. And I went over to Mississippi and hung out with them. We had a little band together and practiced and everything. And RS was kind of the mastermind of putting everything together, a song list and what, you know, what he envisioned for us, because he knew us all forever. And so, we had a band over there for a couple of years called The Drapes.
Oh, that's cool.
We made an EP up in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. A lot of fun.
Yeah. And then what did you do after that?
After that, I came back. My mother was real ill. I didn't realize how ill she was. We toured all over Mid-South, and we'd come over here to play a couple of times, too. We stayed with Omar. Uh-huh. And then I guess the Leroy brothers saw me playing with that band. But I came back to live with my mom and dad when my mom was not very well, and stay with them while, you know, she eventually passed away. And that was pretty rough, but it was a good thing for me to take off to do that. In the meantime, she got healthy enough. One summer, I went out again on the road with the Supertramp. My friend called me, hey, Supertramp's doing the last tour. They're going to break up.
Oh, yeah.
Can you come out and do the summer with us? And I was like, hey, why not? I mean, you know, checked in with my mother's doctors and everything. Said, yeah, she's going to be all right. So go do it. So we went all over Canada and North America with Supertramp.
That's pretty cool.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
They were another great bunch of guys. They would make us, we flew all over Canada, and they would make us sit in first class. They would go back and coach. They would give us their first class tickets.
That's really nice. Wow.
Yeah, they were cool. I mean, they're just regular dudes.
Yeah.
But because of that outing, we finished up the tour in Los Angeles at the keyboard player's house. They had a big party. Rick, I forgot his name, Rick.
Did you know, wasn't Dougie, was that the bass
Dougie,
player?
Dougie, yeah.
I knew that guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He was a sailboat dude. Well, I knew him. I had a different A&R guy when I was on Warner Chappell as a writer, but he was a Warner Chappell guy, like an A&R guy.
Wonderful, yeah. Oh, a super guy. He lived on a sailboat, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was the bass player.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was cool. All those
Scottish
guys are cool.
Dude, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Dougie. Yeah, it's me, Dougie. Yeah.
All those guys were cool. The last song, they had everybody come out and run around as a character. And, you know, they had witches and clowns. And I got to be the basketball player. I would run around with a basketball.
Because you were tall.
Yeah, I was tall. And put me in a basketball suit. And I'd always run into Dougie, man. He was like, I think he did it on purpose. He's like getting in my way, you know.
Yeah.
Like messing up my gig. So I went out with those guys, but at the end of the tour, we had a party at Rick's house, which is right beside Michael Jackson's house Encino. And he had, the first time I'd ever seen, he had a complete full-on recording studio in his back of his house.
Oh, wow.
He had like I mean, it was like unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was like, golly, man. So we all played, and some of the guys from McCartney's band were there, and Average White Band, all the British guys had a little enclave out there in L.A.
That's pretty cool, man.
It was really cool to hang with these guys because, you know, you see them up on, you know, pictures of them.
Yeah.
That's a dude. Yeah, that's a dude. Yeah. And, like, and they all had these old Cadillacs they used to drive around L.A.
Yeah.
These big Fins, you know.
Yeah.
So they had a little club of these little British guys driving these big old Cadillacs. And they'd show up. They showed up at the party because I guess it was the two of the guys got in a disagreement, so that was the end of that part of Supertramp. Whatever was going to go on was going to be something else. And so I played with the band and played some blues and whatever, you know, and played for about an hour. And Roger Hodgson, the singer, came up and said, "Hey, man, what do you do?" I said, "Well, I've been working for you on this tour." He goes, "Man, you got to quit this. You got to quit doing this. You need to get out and play music.
Wow,
you need to get your shit together."
Wow.
And so I took it as a sign, like, well, this dude knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I've just been working for him for, you know, a few months, and these guys are pretty good.
Yeah, they are good.
So, yeah, he kind of gave me the kick in the...
So, sick kick in the pants.
Yep.
Get back out there.
To get thinking about it and whatever it took, you know.
So that was like mid-80s or so?
Yep, mid-80s, yep.
And that's when you joined Leroy Brothers?
No, a couple years after that, I went back to San Antonio and had to deal with my mother's stuff and my dad, live with my dad and for a while, getting everything back to normal, or at least normal as we're ever going to be. But so I played with a bunch of bands down there, but I started practicing again, started writing, thinking about, you know,
what you're going to do
about music again.
Yeah.
And then in that time, Don Leedy had left the Leroy Brothers,
uh-huh.
and they called me to come fill in, and it was sort of an audition, I think. I don't really know. You'd have to ask those guys. But we came and played the Ritz on 6th Street.
Yeah.
And they had cleared the place out and put sand in it. Like, it was a beach.
Beach party.
A beach party.
Yeah.
It was absolutely horrible. But I came and practiced. I practiced with them and learned their tunes. I've seen them on MTV, you know.
Yeah.
It was back then. Music videos were a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I practiced them and whatever worked out. They had already talked to Evan Johns about coming down to play. So I think Evan was going to be a better fit for that group.
Okay.
So I kind of just went back to San Antonio. I was like, well, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, man, and playing around town, maybe get a regular job. You know, my father was pushing me to get a regular job and stay down there.
Yeah.
But then about a year later, their manager called me and said, hey, we need you to be in the band.
Oh, wow.
I was like, well, you sure? See, because last time, I don't think the guys wanted me.
Yeah.
So, we want you to be in the band.
Yeah.
So I came up and said, well, I'll give it a try. If those guys like it, I'll like it too. So,
yeah.
There we go.
And you guys, they were on the road all the time, right?
Well, yeah. The first 10 years I was in the band, we were just gone. Because they had all that promotion from the albums that was just now hitting, you know.
And I think it was you guys that I saw. You played Fitzgerald's in Houston.
Yeah.
I saw you there. Because that was you were in the band like 87 after?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, then that's when I saw them, and that's when I saw you.
Yep, we played everywhere. I mean, everywhere. We went to Europe a lot. We spent a lot of time in Europe, Australia, New Zealand. I think we had offers for Japan, but the money never got there.
Yeah. How was that for you?
Oh, I was like going to college.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Buck is a musicologist, man. He knows music in and out.
Yeah.
We'd be on these long van rides to L.A., and he'd have these cassettes of every kind of music imaginable.
Just
brilliant stuff. It was just like, I was like a sponge, you know, just like, I never heard of this kind of stuff before. It was great. And then to play with Steve every night and hear that voice and the songs, man, it was just incredible. What a blessing.
You ever go to Antone's Records?
Haven't in a long time.
Yeah. Mike has it.
I remember when they all bought it, yeah.
Yeah, I love that record store.
Yep.
Also, it has that smell, you know what I mean? When you walk in, it's like, records, you know? That's a nice feeling. So, you toured for 10 years straight.
Oh, with the Leroys, yeah.
Okay, and then what happened afterwards? Because you played with a lot of people.
Well, you know, Steve and Mike, they started having children.
Right.
So they couldn't tour as much. So I was like, I got to make a living, you know. And they were like, well, they did too. They play with other bands.
Yeah.
So we all just started playing with other people, you know, because the opportunities weren't there as much for us. I mean, there still were some good offers. Of course, we played around town when we could, Continental, Antones. But you know, there just wasn't the demand for us to go back out on the road. In other words, where we would make any money.
Yeah.
We could go do it, sure. But
So
we all started, you know, at least I did. I started answering a lot of calls. People would call me, and it was like, before I was like, nah, I'm going to be gone, you know, and I better not commit to that. But then I started getting some great calls, and I said, yeah, I'm open.
And you played with like Doyle Bramall, you played with Kelly Willis, you played with, who else were you? Like,
Tony Price.
I was with
Tony
for a long time.
11 years, yeah.
You and Scrappy were in that together?
Scrappy and Champ.
Yeah, and Champ. Yeah. Oh, so you must have known Marshall and Warren since they were...
Yep. Well, Marshall I met much later, but I knew Warren when he was a youngster, you know.
Yeah. What a great... They're great guys.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Marshall still live here? He used to live in these apartments.
You know, I don't know.
I'd see him and Warren in the parking lot every once in a while. Yeah.
Those guys are phenomenal because they practice all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, like I did when I was their age.
Yeah. How do you practice a lot now?
Not as much as I ought to. I really need you.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I see all these videos on Facebook. All these guitar players are just monster guitar players. And they're so young. It's like, golly, I wish I could have been that good when I was that young.
But you're so great.
Well.
I mean, you're not just great, but you're also like I guess you're like there's that thing where you have to have a good kind of personality to get all the gigs that you get. You know what I mean? Like you're a good guy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I'm always wanting to be better. I want to be a better guy.
Sure. That's good. That's probably what makes you such a good guy. When did you get married?
I got married in, I better remember this, my wife's probably going to listen.
No.
1991.
Okay.
27 years?
Yeah.
27 years.
You were in the Leroy Brothers and doing the touring?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Leroy's came to our wedding.
What does she do?
She is an administrative, she's actually the assistant dean of science at the University of Texas, San Antonio.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
UTSA.
UTSA, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we moved back to San Antonio when my father passed away. We had a house here in Austin completely paid for because I worked so much. It was like I got a good deal on a house and paid it off.
That's great.
But when my dad passed away, I just couldn't bring myself to sell the home because it was a house I grew up in. My dad built the house in 63.
Wow.
My brother and I planted all the trees, and it's a nice little piece of property that's never going to change.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't do it. Bring myself to sell it. So I asked my wife, hey, what do you think about moving down there? She goes, I don't know, but I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
And she did, and she's been a great trooper about it, and she, I hope, loves it as much as I do.
Yeah.
Because it's my home.
Yeah. You've been playing at Floors almost all your life, right?
Not really. No? You know, Floors was weird in the beginning. I was so young. We used to ride our bikes over there all the time and see all these great country bands.
Yeah.
And we got to meet a lot of the old country fellas, and I was too young to get in.
You play there now at all?
Not much. Nowadays they have most of the younger guys that wear the ball caps, those kind of guys with two first names.
But, you know, because that's the thing that, I mean, what kind of music do you even, like, what kind of music is Brave World?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. It's just, I don't know.
You know what it reminds me of, and it's the same kind of music that I feel like I kind of strive to make, which is, there are elements of country. I mean, you're a B-bender guy, you know, but it's not double vocals on country records. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Or not like that, like in that sort of John Lennon way. That's
right.
Super cool. You know right. what I mean? That what it feels like to me is, I don't know if you remember, like, not that your record sounds like the 90s, but there was a kind of music that KGSR played that no other stations played, like World Party and like Lucinda Williams and stuff like that. That, like, that's what I think of you as. What
cool.
is that?
I don't know. I'll take it.
Cool dude music. Well, it's great. I mean, it's
Thank
great.
You.
It's great to hear. Are you working on anything new now?
I'm always thinking of stuff. I just gotta, you know, I got real lazy. I get real spoiled playing with Donnie and Glenn and Floyd Domino and Booker. You know, it's just like you just take it for granted, which I can't do because these guys are so good.
About writing wise? Are you always writing?
Thinking about writing. I'm not the kind of guy that I kind of gotta sit down and do it.
Yeah.
I can't. It's all up here until it's down here on the paper.
Right.
It's in my brain until I got to write it down. And I haven't gotten many songs ready to write down yet.
Okay.
But when I do, they usually come pretty quickly.
Yeah.
That's how all the songs on that record came.
You really are just a great, great, great songwriter.
Thank you.
Was it that you wrote with Monty?
Take a Look Around.
Great song.
Yeah, Monty had an office over there on Ben White, and he'd write songs every day. And he invited me to come.
The guy didn't mess around.
No. And it shows. He invited me to come write one afternoon. We wrote another one, but it wasn't up to par for me. I think we need to rewrite that one. And I've got a couple ideas for him, too.
You should get back, yeah.
Yeah, we need to.
Because you could do it on a Thursday. You both play up there on Thursdays, right?
Very fortunate to be able to play Thursdays at the Continental. Monty's after me at 8:30 at the Gallery.
Yeah. And you play 6:30 to 9?
6:30 to 9.
Yeah.
Yep.
You go up and watch them?
Yep.
I go and see them regularly, kind of, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do I? Not regularly, but, I mean, do you get out and see music? Who gets you out of the house?
Man, if they're after us, I'll stay and watch them if they're good.
Yeah.
There's these kids from California, actually a family band called Sea Monks.
Oh.
The drummer's 14 years old.
Really?
He's incredible. And the guitar player, not much older than that, and the dad plays bass. They're great.
Did you used to see Charlie when he was that age?
Yep. I was working as a stagehand when I was living with my parents at down there in San Antonio. And I was working as a stagehand at the Majestic Theater when Charlie opened up for The Clash.
Oh, that's
helped
cool.
carry his amp up the stairs.
Wow. You got to see The Clash, too.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Joe was there. I think Jesse was there.
Do you go when you go to festivals now? Because now I'm just thinking about how cool the riggings are of the sound. Like I did a live podcast at ACL, and even those are up in the air.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, that's all behind me. No. I'm sure they've gone, you know, like light years ahead of where we were. We were like cavemen.
Yeah.
Setting all this stuff up back then, but it worked.
Yeah.
And you know, we never had any, knock on wood, disasters. We were. Styx was at the concert right before that big riot, I think, in Cleveland or wherever it was in the Midwest, where they tore the curtains down.
Oh.
And pulled the lighting truss down.
At a Styx show?
No, it wasn't us. It was another group.
Who or something? No.
Maybe so. I don't remember. It was a pretty big tragedy.
Do you don't go to ACL or anything like that?
Never been. Festival? No, I'd love to go. Yeah. I'd love to go play.
Yeah, definitely.
Do they have Austin bands playing?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
You know Sailor Poon?
No.
That's one of Mike. Why am I drawing a blank on his last name? We were just talking about him. The drummer from
Mike Buck.
Mike Buck's daughters is.
Oh,
in the band.
Wonderful! She has a band.
Yeah.
Well, I bet it's
great
good.
Band. There's a lot of bands. There's it's funny because somebody posted something on social media months ago when they announced the lineup of like, oh, I could use more Austin bands. But I was almost like, man, what do you not go see bands? Because like there's a lot of Austin bands. Like,
cool.
I mean, I thought for, but you know, what do you listen to?
You know, I listen to this radio station on New Braunfels when I'm driving up here.
Uh-huh.
Americana.
Okay.
I hear a lot of great music on there.
Is that the one that Ray Wiley used to have the show on?
I don't know. But that's pretty much all I listen to these days, other than the older stuff. You know, I'm still digging through old stuff. Old records and CDs. And
yeah.
Of course, I always go back to the old country stuff and anything with James Burton on it, because I'm a big James Burton nut. You know, I'll find these. People have sent me links to these records where James played guitar on. Wow, I never heard that one before.
Wow, there's still stuff you're finding.
Yes, yeah, there's. Yeah, I'll never find it all.
No, never. Do you use Pro Tools at home at all?
Like no, I don't have any of that stuff. No, yeah. Nah, I'm illiterate.
Well, I don't think that's illiterate. I think that's just like not. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You don't have to use it.
No, I'm happy just to pay somebody to do it. Hire somebody that knows what they're doing.
Well, I hope that another record comes from you soon.
Yep.
I know
Thank
that
you.
Getting the financing and stuff to do it the way that you would want to do it is not always the easiest. I just made a record with Scrappy.
Awesome.
Not even a record, it was an EP, because the record was just way too much money for me to have in there. But I really, man, people get out there and check out this record, Brave World.
Thank you.
Go to CasperRawls.com. You can buy it. You can also check it out on Spotify and the streaming services, because unfortunately that's where it's all going to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, is there anything I'm missing? People can see you every Thursday.
Thursday at
Happy Hour, 6:30.
Mm-hmm. 6:39.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Donnie Wynn.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Fukunaga.
Mm-hmm.
Bucca Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And was it Earl plays with you?
Well, yeah, when Bucca goes on the road.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been encouraging Bucca, you know, kind of, you know, get out the door on his own. You know, he's a great artist in himself.
Great artist,
like,
yeah.
Like, I don't want him to get too tied into, like, playing with me or playing, you know, like, every Thursday. Like,
yeah.
That be his thing. He needs to really think about
his
own career, you know.
Yeah.
So I kind of been trying to push him out the door a little bit.
I've done so many gigs with Donnie. I've done them with Donnie and Glenn. I've done Bodine stuff with Glenn, because sometimes he plays with them.
Right.
And Bucca plays with them also. But I think Stefano play with you too sometimes?
He has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool family of guys.
We're so blessed in Austin. I mean, to just Facebook message somebody, hey, can you come play?
Yeah.
And they don't even ask about money. They don't ask about anything. They're like, yeah, what time is the deal?
Yeah.
If I can fit it in, I will. It's like, I mean, these are world-class musicians. They play on people's, you know, platinum albums and stuff.
Yeah, you're a world-class musician.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
People get out there, go to CasperRawls.com, get Brave New World, great record, and go see them on Thursdays at the Continental Club. Thanks, man.
Thank you for inviting me aboard. Appreciate it.
The amazing Casper Rawls. His latest album, Brave World, is out now. Go to CasperRawls.com for all of your Casper Rawls needs. You can get his record. It's available wherever you stream or download music, probably available at Waterloo Records here in Austin. Also, if you live in Austin, you can catch Casper and his fabulous band on Thursday nights, happy hour, 6:30 to 9 at the Continental Club right here in Austin, Texas. I want to thank Casper for coming by. Great talking to him. Hey, gang, while you're out there checking out CasperRawls.com, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast basically anywhere where you find podcasts, including Spotify. That's right. Spotify now has thousands of podcasts, millions of songs, thousands of podcasts. Get into it. Follow How Did I Get Here? New show every Tuesday and every Friday. Let's hear some more music from the great Casper Rawls. Let's get down.
Tell me.